Welcome to Chicago Jazz Revealed. I'm Mike Jeffers here. We are live at Katarina's, 1920 West Irving Park Road here in Chicago. We are doing another special edition of Chicago Jazz Revealed because we have pianist Tom Muehlner in. How are you, Tom?
Not too bad.
Well, that's encouraging.
I'm sick of winter, but that's okay.
No, it's just starting, so get ready.
Yes.
A couple of months ago, Tom was on, and Tom is, for our listeners that don't know Tom, I'm sure many of you do, Tom is one of the first call piano players in town, and so he performs with a lot of different musicians, instrumentalists and vocalists, and Tom also runs one of the, I guess
Premier,
I was looking for the word, thanks for jumping in, the premier jam sessions in the city, and it's been, what, 3 years now?
It will, yeah, we're starting our third year the first week of January.
So that's every Monday night at the Serbian Village, 8:30 to 12:30 or 9 to 1?
9 to 1.
And a couple of months ago, I thought it was a great idea because Tom performs with all of these different people and, you know, at the jam session and all over the town, he pretty much plays every single night of the week. I said, Tom, why don't you once a month or so get a couple of musicians that we should... Here comes the name of the show, Reveal to Chicago, and have him on the show as your guest, and I'll let you do a little interviewing, and I'll help out on the interview. But I thought it would be a cool way to bring in people that we might not, you know, see on a regular basis, but you know of their caliber, and to make sure that our listeners can learn all about them. So we're calling this Tommy's Showcase, and we had a... This is our third one, I believe, Tommy's Showcase.
Yeah, I think so.
And so tonight, who do we have here for our first guest? We've got two guests tonight.
Yes, the lovely Angel Spicha.
Hello.
And who I've had the pleasure of working with for several years. I'm the substitute dad.
Yes, you are. Sub-dad.
Because her father's a pianist, and they work together.
Mm-hmm. Now, Angel's a vocalist, too. We should tell all our listeners.
Yes.
For since this isn't TV, they can't tell if she's got a saxophone or anything.
That's true.
She's a vocalist.
Good point. She's by a microphone.
So why don't I jump in here, and I'll get the ball rolling here, Tom, and then you can chime in whenever you'd like, just like we did the last couple.
Okay.
Angel and I met... once back in the day, I've never gotten to perform with you.
No.
So hopefully that'll happen at some time soon.
Absolutely.
But I looked over your bio and looked at some different things. Why don't we talk about your father first and foremost?
Sure.
Because I think he's probably a major influence in your music.
Most definitely.
So let's talk a little bit about your father's influence. He plays piano with you and he accompanies you. Did he get you into being a vocalist?
By accident. It was not something that was ever pushed on me or shoved down my throat. I think a lot of people think that way. But he always was in music. He's from Italy. He's from Rome, Italy, and started his music studies there and then came here when he was 18 and continued to play. And then just kind of one thing led to another. And so when I came around, my mother worked days. And so I was generally with him on a blanket while he practiced piano all day and had the guys over for rehearsal. And that's sort of just the way I grew up from the beginning. And then he'd go to work at night, and I was with my mom, who is kind of a closet singer. And she doesn't, by any means, she just does it for fun. So we used to go around and go grocery shopping or things like that and just, you know, sing to whatever was on the radio. And
By the way, her mother's a great cook.
She is. Oh, she is.
I've been hearing about this for a while.
We got to get you in on that, Tom.
Okay.
For sure.
All right. Sorry.
I think he's trying to get in on it. That's why he's dropping her name.
Absolutely.
So she was always around. She got you.
Yeah. So between the both of them, it was just sort of a natural thing. And my dad said one time, you know, he was just playing piano and we would all just kind of sit around and sing and mess around. And he noticed that I could hold pitch and that I really had sort of a little soul, he said, mm-hmm. when I sang and I was little and I really felt the music. And, again, he never pushed me, but it was something that just kind of sort of came natural. And I always wanted to be around it. I wanted to be around the musicians and I wanted to be in the studio. I wanted to be part of it as much as I could.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't remember it ever not being a huge part of my life.
So it really got ingrained right off the bat.
Yeah,
I mean, you got ingrained.
Now, I was lucky.
Now, did you do organized? You know, did you get into high school stuff? Or?
I did. I was really fortunate too, because the high school I went to had a really strong fine arts program, and they really supported that. And so we had great choir programs and several voice teachers on staff, great professional productions. So I was, again, I didn't know how lucky I was to have all that really, you know, kind of professional experience just going to junior high and high school.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, you must have been way ahead of the pack. I mean, by the time you got there, you probably knew tunes, right?
I did. not knowing that I was ahead of the pack, just kind of, you know, taking what I learned at home and applying it, and the teachers seemed to like that a lot, so that was kind of cool, and I was doing piano lessons and my own voice lessons on the side as well, so it was just always a huge, huge part of my upbringing.
Yeah. Now, I saw in your bio that you ended up going to Millikan University.
I did.
And that was a good, I mean, that is a good music school, but it's also drama and theater and all of those too, right?
Huge,
I mean,
musical theater program.
Were you into the musical theater stuff?
In high school I was, but once I got to college, I was not. I was strictly doing I did music business, so I studied a lot of, you know, marketing. I took accounting, which was all good stuff, I guess.
Which is really rare too at a lot of music colleges.
Yeah.
They don't teach that stuff.
No, they don't. And they really had a heavy program for the industry, which was awesome. And I did an internship, and I think that was really, really important. I think it should almost be mandatory for music students. So I was music business, and I did commercial music, so engineering. That was the other degree I earned. And between the two, it was busy, it was full, but I loved it. It was
so
great.
Commercial, meaning engineering, like studio engineering?
Right, studio engineering, okay. Production.
So is that, I mean, do you use that at all other than for yourself? Are you working in studios?
No, I don't. I did when I first came out, and I was trying to, you know, intern around, and I was helping in various studios in the city. But those kind of, you know, as we all know, those started to dry up a little bit.
Yeah.
And my dad has a studio in their basement. So, you know, try to sit down there and mess around, just basically
keeping chops up.
Yeah,
and
keep
stuff,
right.
Yeah.
Keeping fresh, and everything is changing too. I mean, things have certainly changed since I've been in school, and everyone's got their own little system now and in their own bedrooms. So it's really, really fascinating to see how it's all evolved.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, I think it's real interesting, and Tom, I'll let you jump in here after this, but I think it's really interesting that a smaller school, because Millikan's a smaller school, has a music business program.
That's great.
I mean, the thing that when I got out of school, I had to learn all of that on my own.
Sure.
I mean, it was just like, and I still see, I mean, you know, I work on that all the time, and I try to learn as much as I can. Well, I keep trying. But my point is that it's amazing to me that these larger schools, it's not mandatory. It's not even talked about half the time.
It's not. I was just down there this past weekend. I do a big holiday show down with my professors, which is great. I used to gig with them all the time in school.
Yeah.
The advantage of going to a small school is you get to know your teachers. They get to know you and your weaknesses and your strengths. And, you know, with that program there, they did. They spent time with you. They would help, you know, they would hone in on what you were strong at and what you needed some work on, and especially if, you know, you were a little bit, even with your personality, if you were kind of shy, and they said, okay, well, you're going to have to market yourself one day. How are you going to do that? And that is critical. Every school obviously doesn't have that, and you can graduate and come up here and think it's just going to happen, and it doesn't.
Well, jazz musicians are very good with money, and you know, they really are great accountants. And,
very, very good, yes.
You know, I've noticed that, you know.
CPA worthy.
In your travels, you've noticed that.
Yeah.
Well, Tom, you have some. I see all these notes in front of you. I feel like I'm hogging the interview.
I think you pretty much covered all the notes I have. but one thing I will say about Angel, she is a natural, and she sings. She knows a lot of tunes. And she's a great jazz singer, but she can do pop music too. So, and you have what's in the, you work with your dad? You guys have like a jobbing.
I do.
My
dad has been doing this. You know, has been in the jobbing industry for probably 30 years now with the same guys, which is awesome. They're kind of like family to me.
Yeah. Eddie. I know Eddie.
Yeah, Eddie. You know Eddie real well, Ed Williams. And our band is Phase Four, And then we have a couple offshoot bands that we book out as well. Mm-hmm. But, you know, just doing all the weddings and the corporate functions and country clubs, holiday parties, and it's great. I kind of went into it kicking and screaming a little bit. I really wanted to just do jazz, and that's really hard to do full time. But I found that going into to doing all that really made me a much better singer. Being mm-hmm. doing all the pop and all the and being versatile, it made me a much better singer, and I love it now. I really enjoy getting to do all the varied type of music.
Well, why don't we? Because you've got a new CD out. It's called Angel. One Day, All Too Soon.
Yes.
And why don't we take a listen to? I think we were talking before the show.
Sure.
Why don't we take a listen to your beautiful voice, as Tom Muehlner has talked about here. And why don't we take a listen to the first track, which is I've Never Been in Love Before, and that's a standard. Now, you know, before we do that, I mean, I'm looking at these tunes. I mean, these are all classic standards.
Sure.
How hard is it to actually pick the tunes that are going to be on the CD? It's got to be insane.
It's the worst part.
Right? Yeah.
Everyone's like, you know, how'd you do that? I go, it took me months. You know, it really is a process of elimination, and it's not always things that you like. It's what you think, you know, will fit the album, and you kind of go through it and take things out as you go, and what doesn't work, and what you thought might sound good when it got recorded.
Choosing the order of the songs that, you know, what you want to be number one, number
absolutely.
Two, all that stuff.
This was an education all on its own.
Oh,
the next time it's going to be killer.
Well, why don't we take a listen here? It's Angel, One Day, All Too Soon here on... And the tune is I've Never Been in Love Before here on WDCB 90.9 FM and ChicagoJazz.com. Okay, we're back here at Chicago Jazz Revealed. I'm Mike Jeffers, live at Katarina's, 1920 West Irving Park Road.
Yeah.
The crowd is going crazy as usual here on a Tuesday. I think they're going crazy because you're here, Tom. We've got Tom Muehlner here, and we're with Angel Spezia. Yes, Spezia. I had to pull out the Italian there. So, Tom, take it away.
Take it away, yes. Well, Angel, you've been in Italy and many other countries performing. How was that for you?
It was exciting. It was very exciting.
When did that happen?
I took a year after college. Actually, I kind of extended my college a little bit and decided to do my internship there. I had to do an internship for my degree. So since everything is so set up in a certain way with your class schedule, you're really not allowed to study abroad during your time, during your 4 years. So I kind of finagled something out. So I was able to go abroad to Italy, and my father's from there. So I have a lot of family there. I was very familiar with, you know, the language and the country. Yeah. And so it was just great to be able to spend some time there. And I did an internship working for a music school and working with students from everything from doing, you know, helping them with their English on tunes and working in the studio and then hosting American performers. We had the Chicago Jazz Arts Ensemble come in while I was there.
Okay.
And that was super cool because I got to take them around and get them all set up. And they were from Chicago and I was homesick. So it was really, really nice.
You know, I've been wanting to go to Italy, Angel. I just thought I'd mention it.
Let's go, Tom.
Okay.
Well,
so get a gig there.
You got it. I'm in.
Well, jumping in here, I mean, with when you're teaching, talking about music and everything in Italy and... you know, I'm sure the people that don't even speak English know all the words to the tunes,
they
right?
Do.
I mean, it's pretty amazing. So you had to be pretty floored when you got there, right?
Well,
you're hearing these standards sung by people that can't even speak fluent English, but they know the lyrics to the tunes.
It was adorable. You know, it's really something that because they have such an appreciation for jazz there that is wonderful.
Pretty much all over Europe.
It is. It's you. I remember going to the Chicago Jazz Arts Ensemble, taking them there. I mean, these sold out shows. These people would come out and just wait for the band to get off stage for their autograph, pictures.
Yeah.
And they were so appreciative of them taking the time to be there.
Why do you think that is?
Why
is it different in Europe? Is it just because everybody takes it for granted here,
I think a little bit. I think that we've been they have a deep culture.
They're a lot older, that's for sure.
Well, even the young people. I mean, it's really...
I mean, it's...
Yeah, obviously.
It's older,
their history is ingrained, and their culture is so sacred there.
Yes,
And
the
that
arts are,
they
are
really appreciate
paramount.
The arts in general.
Mm-hmm.
So something like that is, you know, it's considered American by nature. They love it, and they appreciate it. And I think that was an advantage for me going out there being a singer and doing jazz, and I knew all the words fluently.
Yeah, yeah.
So that was helpful for me. But they did. They loved it, and they were so kind. They were really, really wonderful. It was hard to come home.
Yeah. I mean, is it possible to actually make a living playing music in Italy as opposed to, you know?
I think it's just like anything. You have to really apply yourself. It's definitely possible. There are places to play, and you just like anywhere here, you have to be aggressive a little bit and be nice to people and just put yourself out there. Yeah. They're not going to come find you.
Yeah, you definitely have to work at that kind of stuff.
Right.
So how did you end up? So you came back, and then did your father already had, he was already in a jobbing band. And for our listeners that don't know what a jobbing band is, why don't you explain that to them?
A jobbing band. A jobbing band is, we call ourselves the Weekend Warriors, where, you know, you're primarily the entertainment for weddings and social functions. Of varying types. You know, you could just do a jazz gig for that too, your background music, or usually you're doing everything from cocktail music at the beginning to, you know, classical music for a ceremony, and then you go into all the current pop stuff for the actual dancing portion of the night. And you know, that's the jobbing part of it.
Right. Yeah. You know, it's interesting too, because I talk to people in New York or LA and they call it casuals.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
and then here it's jobbing, and you know, it's all the same stuff, but it's interesting how there's different names for
lingo,
it.
Lingo, sure.
You know.
It's hard to keep that kind of activity afloat with DJs coming in, because a lot of times, like I'll do a wedding where I'm just doing the cocktails and dinner, and then they bring the DJ in who does the announcing, and so having a live band these days is not, I won't say a rarity, but it's less and less.
Well, I also think, I mean, you have it dialed in, Angel. So, I mean, you know, there's a lot of different options probably with your band, because you guys
Absolutely.
Are covering a lot of different genres,
right,
as opposed to, you know, getting somebody to come in just to play the jazz stuff, but then
right.
you want the dancing. So, I mean, it's...
We're all in house.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So, I mean, you're able to walk in. Now, did you start that whole business with your father? Like, did you expand it, I should say? Or?
I wouldn't say... I definitely didn't start it. He started it a long time ago, but, you know, I'm sort of in that age group of all those people that are getting married and right in that time. So I see the trends and I pay attention to how things are moving, and I'm real zoned in onto, you know, presentation and what people want. And so he's got his experience and I've got my modern vision, I guess you'd call it. And we really collaborate together.
It's probably a great mix.
It's awesome. We have a great time. Yeah. And, you know, sometimes we may butt heads a little bit, but,
do you bring in tunes? I mean, like, here's one we got to do.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I all the time. There's times of the year you're busier than others. The summer when all the new radio hits are coming out, and I try to stay on top of that. And
that's key to be able to keep getting gigs too.
Absolutely,
you got to stay on top of all that stuff.
You have to be on top of it.
Yep. And there's not a lot of bands that can do that stuff either in town. They say they can, but then I've heard them, and they really actually can't.
Right.
Oh yeah, no problem. We'll do that tune.
Yeah,
oh really?
Okay, maybe.
Sure. That doesn't sound exactly like it, but
right.
Okay, whatever. So yeah, I mean, staying on top of all that stuff.
Sure.
So,
and
key.
And, right. And then you know you have to make it sound as close to the original as possible. That's what people want.
Yeah, that's how they know
right.
it. That's how they perceive it and understand
right.
it.
Right. It's not like jazz where you take your own you know
interpretation.
Twist on things. Exactly.
Yeah.
Now, Tom, you were talking about Windy City Live.
That's right.
And Angel was nominated for something
in February. She was chosen
2013.
Out of, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not too long ago, chosen out of thousands and became a finalist on ABC's Windy City Live.
Is that like an American Idol type thing on Windy City Live?
They were doing a little like Chicago Idol thing
yeah.
here. So Windy City Live is kind of the little talk show that we have locally. And
it's like one of the top shows. I mean,
yeah, it's a morning
slot.
Show.
Yeah.
It's I think it's in its third year now or so.
Yeah.
And
took over for Oprah.
Yeah, and that's right. And now
I know my media.
You sure
I know
do.
My media.
You're good,
you watched
Mike.
Oprah too, huh?
Well, you know, I'm not going to talk about that right now.
But they had this contest going around, and I had only heard about it probably the week before. And I mean, I think a lot of singers we've done some of those American Idol types of things, mm-hmm. and it really leaves you a little cold. Just with those kind of experiences, they've been good, they've been bad. And just, you know, this one was local, just decided to try it out, and I got chosen to be one of the final 12, and it was very exciting. We got to work with some, you know, quote unquote celebrity judges, and they came in and did some coaching, and it was great. And then I've been on the show several times doing little spots here and there. So it was really, really a good experience.
Well, it opened some doors too. I mean, just to be able to get more PR and more media exposure for yourself, that helps everything.
Always. It was nothing but positive in my case. So I couldn't be happier about how it turned out, even though I didn't win. That's okay.
Well, you know, we've got Rusty Jones in the audience. And Rusty, you know,
I
don't know, but they've never had an American Idol for drummers. I don't understand it at all. He said they spelled Idol I-D-L-E. Okay, well.
Poor guy.
We never get invited anywhere. That's no fun. We'll have to fix that. Same thing with you, Tom. They don't have an American Idol for piano players.
No, they don't. So many drummers, so little time. I don't know.
Hello. Yeah.
Okay. Just kidding.
The crowd's going to turn on you in a minute. Yeah. All right, so Angel, so you're performing on a weekly basis too, in addition to doing the weekend stuff and everything. Where's that?
I've been really, really fortunate since probably the last 9 years since I've been out of school. My dad and I have a jazz duo together in Glenview.
In
the Glen. Yes, the Glen area. It used to be the old Naval Air Station there, and now it's the Glen. It's a really beautiful place at a place called Bravo. So Wednesdays and Thursdays from 6 to 10, we have a great little setup in there, and when Dad's not there, Tommy's there usually.
That's true.
Sub-dad.
And the food is real good.
Food's
there
great. They have great little specials, and the community really appreciates it. It's been
That's why I do
such a great experience. I know you.
Well, I'm sure they can get more information at your website. What's your website?
Well, my website is www.angelspecia.com, and that's SPICCIA.com.
Excellent. And, of course, you can see and hear Angel and her father, or Tom, or another piano player if your father's not working and Tom's working, on Wednesdays and Thursdays from 6 p.m. to 10 p.m. at Bravo in the Glen. And I'm sure all of our listeners know where the Glen is, and if you don't, Google search.
Yeah.
It's very simple.
It's close.
Why don't we hear one more tune on the way out?
Sure.
This is off of your new CD, Angel, One Day, All Too Soon. And what are we going to hear?
You were talking about Italy, and I thought maybe it'd be nice to do Estate, since I sing that one in Italian.
That's excellent. Great choice. Well, I'm glad you came in.
Thank you so much for having me. It was so great.
Thank you.
I really appreciate it.
And so why don't we take a listen to Estate?
Wonderful.
Here on 90.9 FM, WDCB, ChicagoJazz.com. Okay, we're back here at Chicago Jazz Revealed here on WDCB. I'm Mike Jeffers, 90.9 FM, WDCB, and we are live at Katarina's, 1920 West Irving Park Road here in Chicago. And Tom, we have another guest here as part of Tommy's Showcase. I should mention that Tom Muehlner is my co-host here for this this show, and we're doing a Tommy's Showcase because Tom Muehlner is a piano player in town. And he performs with a lot of different musicians.
That's true.
And so I'm excited, actually, because I know Bill Overton's work, and I've seen you in the Chicago Jazz Orchestra and seen you perform
and I do
a lot of other places.
Interesting stuff together, like the Dracula Quartet.
Is that what you're famous for, Bill, the Dracula Quartet?
I would say most of my fame, yes.
came from
my widespread fame has come as Dracula, my portrayal of Dracula.
Count Orloff. But
why don't you explain that, Tom?
Yeah, everyone's confused.
Here we go.
Okay, Bill and I have this affinity for the old movies from the 30s and 40s. The Universal films especially, you know, Frankenstein and Boris Karloff and especially Bela Lugosi. And we will quote lines from those movies. And we get together and have what we... This has nothing to do with music.
That's okay. That's all right.
But we'll get together and have...
It explains a lot about you.
Yes.
So.
Tell
me more. We sometimes will get together and have what we call a Bella
Very
effect.
Seldom.
Yes. Not seldom. Yeah,
he never
not
invites
often,
me.
Yeah, not often enough. But we have a Bella Fest, and we will watch these movies and have some... beers and you know, things like that.
I stopped drinking 2 years ago.
Oh, that's right.
Beers.
Just because of this fest. No. So I always say
this alleged phantom fest
that
you're talking
about. That you're
about.
Never invited to.
This thing actually was started by John Campbell and myself. And then when John moved to L.A., a couple months after that, we had a Bella Fest. And I decided, we called, while during the Bella Fest, we called John Campbell and fired him. He's no longer the vice president, and I put Bill Overton in charge of being vice president.
But I've renamed myself.
Yes, he has.
I'm the Kaiser.
The Kaiser,
the
right.
The Kaiser.
Yes.
Kaiser Wilhelm.
Well, Bill, I'm sorry that we're out of time.
Okay.
Oh, that's a relief.
No, but besides being a great tenor player, Bill, and woodwinds and so on, he also plays guitar and sings.
Oh, okay.
And he's done his share of jobbing over the years, too. Mm-hmm.
Paid my dues.
Yes.
Well, you know, Tommy forwarded me your bio, and just looking over it, you were in Memphis. You came up in Memphis, so you must have been around music as you were growing up in Memphis. Is that?
Well, absolutely. You know, and I have an older brother and an older sister who had, you know, 45 records. They were into just the pop music of the day, and so there might be a Patti Page record or Nervous Norvus. I got into Nervous Norvus real heavy when I was about five. Supposedly, my first words were Jerry Wee Woos. I couldn't pronounce my L's yet, but Jerry Wee Woos, my first words.
Right.
So yeah, I you know, and all that, all the stuff from Sun and Sax, towards Elvis.
Sure.
I have a very soft spot in my heart for Elvis. We used to, when I was a kid, see him around town a little bit, just doing normal things.
And you
things.
Even like peanut butter and nana sandwiches too, right?
Who, me?
Yeah.
No, I had to lay off that. I'm just living on sunlight now.
Oh, okay.
So you used to see Elvis around town?
A little bit, yeah, riding his motorcycle. I remember one time my brother called me and said, hey, you know, come with me. We rode our bikes over to the local church parking lot, and Elvis and his men were out there flying model airplanes. Well, actually, Elvis was flying. Everybody else was waiting on him. And he would fly one around and get it going really fast and then crash it. And then they'd all crack up. And then they'd hook up another one. And he would, you know. So they were having fun, him and his boys. But, yeah, you know, and I
good
still love
boys.
Elvis. Still love Elvis.
Yeah. And, well, I mean, you know, influentially, too. I mean, with Elvis, with all the different music that was happening down there, that all had to rub off on you as you were growing up.
Yeah, and when I got into, you know, high school, I guess I had played. When the Beatles hit town, I had to have a guitar. That was 64. Yeah. And so I started banging around on that a little bit. I took lessons from an old lady. I still remember her, Mrs. Tillman. She taught me how to play Wouldn't I Say on the four-string guitar. And I remember she was a true musician because I had never quite met anybody like her. I really liked her, but I had never really quite met anybody like her. When I went in for the first lesson, there was stuff stacked around. And my mom was not the neatest person, but, I mean, things were pretty organized and clean and stuff. And this lady had stuff stacked. I mean, it looks a lot like my house now. But so we were having the lesson and everything. She said, hey, would you like a Coca-Cola? I said, yes, I'd love one. So she brought me the little bottle of Coke, and we each had a sip of our own Cokes. And I set it down on the floor. And I must have gotten excited because I kicked the bottle over. And when I realized what I had done, of course, I was horrified, and I picked the bottle up, and about half of it had spilled out.
Yeah.
And I just expected her to flip out, you know, because that's what I would have seen at home.
Sure.
And she said, I said, well, gee, you know, we should clean that up. She said, nah, don't worry about it. I said, but, you know, my mother's going to come back and pick me up, and she'll see that, and she'll know that I've spilled Coke in your house. And she goes, we'll just tell our little puppy came in here. So that was my first introduction to a true musician, and I just fell in love right there. And so from then on, I was hooked. But when I got into high school, you know, I got into the school band. I guess I saw the Sears catalog, and I liked the alto sax, so I started playing alto sax. And by the time I got into high school, I guess I had a good ear, and I could kind of hear. And so some older guys got me to play with their band, and, you know, we rehearsed three times a week learning – all the Memphis stuff, Sam and Dave, Otis Redding, Wilson Pickett, Sam Cooke, just you name it, you know, and just having a great time playing that stuff. In those days, we would play for dances. I mean, kids would rent out the local National Guard Armory or something every weekend somewhere, some little town around the Midwest, and we would go and play for them and play for the door. They charged a couple of bucks to get in. But, you know, that was fabulous fun and experience and just a great social thing to be able to do. Everybody was great friends. We never had any problems doing that.
Yeah.
You know, but I remember, too, you know, growing up in high school, there were we never thought about any type of I never got any kind of racial vibes when I was playing music either, which was so when I looking back on that, I just remember how great that was and how great that felt to be able to walk in a club and not and be so young and not even be aware that you're in a different cultural environment because it was so welcoming, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, and so, you know, I never had any idea.
That's what's great about music, really.
Yeah, it brings everybody together. It's fabulous.
So. Yeah, the universal language.
Well, it is. I mean, and the experiences you had just as a young person, I mean, that's mm-hmm. it's incredible. I mean, you know, nowadays you would never, you can't even, you know, tell a high school kid to have these experiences because they're just not available at all.
Yeah, and, you know, and just to be able to play a 3-hour or 4-hour gig
right.
with a band and know that many tunes at that young age is great, real challenging. But, you know, we worked on it. But being, you know, rehearsing that much, I mean, we had no time to get into trouble or anything. It was mm-hmm. all good, clean fun, and we learned a ton of music, too.
I came up the same way,
yep.
and I thank God for it, because I have, it grounded me. But now, Bill, you have a B.A. and master's from the University of Illinois, which mm-hmm. is a very, that's a really impressive school. So many of my good friends went through that school, and John Campbell, I know, was there. And
well,
Kelly,
there was that whole thing when Garvey was down there, right?
Right.
Is that what it was? And that whole school was just huge. I mean, Joel Spencer and Kelly Sill and everybody, mm-hmm. yourself. I mean, the list could go on and on and on.
Yeah.
Why was it so special at that moment in time at U of I?
Well, I think the real main thing was that music and friendship and social parties, things like that, and just hanging out was all one thing. You know, we hung out, played, practiced, lived, ate together, and hung out and partied and just had a great time, you know, all the time, whenever we felt like it. So, and we were always challenged. There were always jam sessions going on. There was always a few joints around town you could get a gig and play. And again, the mentors, you know, Ron DeWar, who remains my man, he's still the greatest player I ever heard. And believe me, I heard him. When I was in New York, I spent 20 years in New York, and I heard them all. I heard Sonny Rollins, Joe Henderson, George Coleman, and Johnny Griffin, all of them. And, you know, I have to go back to Ron and say, that's just the most moving thing, most creative person. So, and in so many styles of music, that was the other thing. It wasn't just like Sonny Rollins style tenor playing or Coltrane. It was Jelly Roll Morton and, you know, King Oliver and Louis Armstrong that those guys all played. So, I developed a real big appreciation for all that stuff. But I think, again, you know, what made it special was just the people that were there and the vibe that was around that place that still is there. You know, my daughter went to school there, and she's 26 now, graduated several years ago. And it's still the same. A little bit physically has changed, but it's still that kind of place.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and it's just thinking about all the people that were down there that then came up here. Mm-hmm. I mean, the whole music scene is flooded from especially from that era.
Jim Cox. There's so many.
Yeah, Art Davis.
All our buddies, actually.
Right.
All the people who belong to the Bella Fest, actually,
you know, and they,
now that I think
and
about it.
The thing is that, too, people have kept that vibe about them. You know, when you see Art Davis, he's still the same Art Davis as he was 30 years ago. You know, so it's just they love music. They keep that kind of vibe going because that's how we learn to do it, to experience it, you know.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what. Why don't we take a listen to a tune, and then we'll come back, and we'll talk a little bit more with Bill Overton here on Chicago Jazz Revealed, 90.9 FM, WDCB, ChicagoJazz.com. Okay, we're back here at Chicago Jazz Revealed. I'm Mike Jeffers. We are live at Katarina's, 1920 West Irving Park Road here in Chicago. And,
one of the greatest jazz clubs in the world.
I like that. One of the greatest jazz clubs in the world.
That's
actually,
right.
It was. It voted one of the top jazz clubs in the world. And both of you guys have performed here.
Katarina's a sweetheart, too.
I agree. Yeah. And both of you guys have performed here regularly. So for more information at katarinas.com.
Well, we have a few different bands. One is called the Sanity Clauses, and that's around the holidays, and we play jazzy Christmas stuff. And then what is it? The Dracula Quartet. Mm-hmm. It was a quintet, actually, this year. We just did it at the Jazz Showcase on October 30th. And
all of our bands are based on mythical creatures.
Yes, yeah.
I was going to ask you about the Easter Bunny, if you had anything.
We live in fantasy here.
Nothing on the Easter Bunny, huh, Tom?
Yeah.
You got to...
Hey, how about it?
He's starting to
brainstorm. Tom has a tradition of running around naked on Easter.
Yes.
We like to avoid that.
that's the day that they avoid me, so...
Well, I'm going to avoid you as well, so...
Yes. Well, one thing I wanted to ask, Bill, is when you were in New York for 20 years, you played with some legendary people like Rosemary Clooney. And so can you tell me about those experiences?
Hmm. Well, I just feel very, very fortunate to have gotten to play with some of my heroes, not regularly, but just every now and then. You never knew who was going to show up on a gig. You know, you might play a party on Long Island, and there's Jamil Nasser on the bass. Nicest guy in the world, sweet, generous. Yeah. Tell you anything you wanted to know. Man, what was that? Oh, you know, here it is. You know, it's just something you pick up at sessions, you know, no big deal. But here it is, and wow, you know. And I got to play one night with Major Holly and Mickey Broker, and those guys were hilarious. They were just laughing the whole time, having a blast. They were, and see, and there again, you know, just people having fun playing music. But it was just
what it's about, really.
Yeah, and you know, just every now and then, I mean, you know, playing with some people. I played with Vince Giordano's band for a long time, kind of fell in with that crowd, and played with some other big bands. Sat next to me, for my money, the greatest lead alto player ever, Chuck Wilson, who not a lot of people know, but he played with lead alto with Buddy Rich a long time ago, and has just done everything, mm-hmm. and is just an impeccable player. But, you know, that's an education, because you sit next to that. Now I can kind of hear what it's supposed to sound like to play lead alto, and, you know, that's just an invaluable experience. So, but, you know, getting to play with Mel Lewis and just every now and then, and just that being right next to that ride cymbal, that mm-hmm. China thing with the rivets, and, you know, that's Mel Lewis, man. I mean, so, you know, and it just makes you, of course, a much better player. It elevates your whole playing, and then you're kind of at a different level. But, you know, that was, I never was really a regular in that crowd, but like I said, being around New York every now and then, you know, even if you're sort of on the periphery, you get to, if you're second or third call, you'll get to play with those guys every now and then.
Yeah. Well, you know, when you were there, so you were there after college, you went up there.
Right, 19. I spent a little time in Nashville, which is real interesting. I'm from Tennessee, and after U of I, I got teaching degrees at U of I at the suggestion of a very, very wise friend of mine, a mentor of mine, Doug Lemon, who was my teacher. And so then I got out of school, and I really didn't right then want to be a band director. And my first opportunity was playing in a lounge band in Nashville with some guys I'd played with earlier. And so I went down there and got to meet some of the real heavies on the Nashville scene at that time, great guitar players and mm-hmm. great people that could get together with, you know, two or three guitars and a keyboard and a steel player and never double anything or have one clash or anything like that. It was just amazing to hear those guys play. So I got to do a couple of those things. And then some circumstances kind of changed in my family, and I eventually moved to New York the next year and stayed there until 1998, something like that. So I was there about 18.
Were you teaching in New York? Is that why you went up there?
I taught some. I've always been a teacher, and I taught some in New York. I really wanted to focus in on being a player, but like everybody else, I got a part-time job at William Patterson College and taught at Brooklyn Conservatory and did the Ebersole clinics mm-hmm. a lot of summers and just various kinds of adjunct freelance things that I would do. Toward the end of my stay in New York, I started getting into, because I had a family by that time, I started getting into the public school realm and kind of trying to crack into that. And then when we moved to to Illinois in 1998. I got a teaching job, and I was there for 15 years and until this fall. That was a great experience for me. It was a K through 8 school. And
Running the band program?
Right. I taught 4th through 8th grade band and jazz band, symphonic band combo, and just had a wonderful time doing that, learned a ton, and just I love working with kids. And
it's a lot of work, too. People don't realize it.
It's a lot of work, and I found myself sort of sneaking in playing. You know, I wasn't really focusing like I had been on playing, but at the same time, I really tried to make it a point to play with kids all day, because I know for myself, hearing a sound, then I have an idea of what it's supposed to be like. And so I would play with them and model playing a lot with them and that in my teaching. So I kind of, you know, kept my chops up and played some gigs and stuff. But now I'm free. So I want to really focus in on being a musician again and, you know, doing a lot of practicing and all that. So,
well, you know, it must have been a huge advantage having you as the band director, knowing what you know and who you've played with and everything, to be able to get ideas from you. And I mean, did you notice the kids when you first started teaching compared to, you know, later on, all of a sudden you saw the levels just really creeping up?
Mm-hmm. Well, I do think that it was good for me to have that kind of experience. However, I've still really, you know, teaching every day, you learn a ton. You learn a ton of how to be more effective, and hopefully on a daily basis, you're, you know, sort of learning something about yourself and about how you go about things. I think when I started out, I was a little I had too high of an expectations, and maybe was kind of grouchy from time to time, and that probably turned kids off. But, you know, you learn to sort of temper that passion and to try to bring them along and get them into it. And, you know, I don't know. I guess I always felt, I always go back to my 8th grade language teacher, who we all thought was a witch and was just somebody who, she was mean and just, she made us diagram
sentences.
I had
the same one, I think.
You know, and just, and we just thought, oh, this is such a drag, you know. But you know what? Now I can write a sentence. I can write an email that makes sense, and I can write a letter. And all. So I guess I would rather be that kind of teacher, who's somebody who's demanding, and then have them maybe be a little put off by it, but still work real hard and everything. I think kids, if you can play for them, then they, and on a high level, then they get a more of an insight. It sort of cuts to the chase.
Sure.
So, you know, and plus, you know, you learn how to play bass. I learned how to play bass and a little piano and drums. And,
well, you have to, out of necessity, get all the other chops together.
True. Yeah, so, you know, just it's fun. I got a set of digital drums now and having a blast, bunch of basses, you know, having a blast.
Tom, you have anything else here?
Yeah, well,
Tom's got all of his long sheets of notes. You can see
right.
Them over
They're
here.
Written on scrap paper here. No, but one thing I've always been impressed about Bill is that he's been a member of Chicago Jazz Orchestra for a lot of years. I still call them the jazz members. I can't help it. But that is one of the premier orchestras in the entire world and has some major talent in it. And how long have you been doing that?
Well, I was in it for about the first year. They started that band, I think, back in right around the time that I left
U of I,
town.
Right?
Yeah. So I was in it for a little while.
So you were in the original beginning. In the Jazz Members
right.
Big Band. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, and I was in it for a little while at the very beginning. I think we made one CD way back there. And then, you know,
Who were some of those original people? Was John Campbell part of that?
Yeah, I think so. And just all those guys, you know, Ed Peterson, of course, Art, and Steve Jensen.
Right.
You know, and I mean,
Jeff Lindbergh, and,
right?
And,
you know, Lindbergh, and, and just Brian Sanders was still around town then. But yeah, it was basically the U of I band, and they kind of continued on after that. And but then I left for New York and was gone. And I did some gigs out there when they would do the Kennedy Center. I think I did that a couple of times when I was living in New York for them. But then when I came back to town in '98, I picked up again and have been playing with them ever since.
Mm-hmm. And they're for our listeners that don't know this, you guys do the Kennedy Center, what is it, 25 years now, 26
this
years?
This is the 25th
year.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I've talked to the executive director, Travis.
Mm-hmm.
And he talks about how you guys had Stevie Wonder sit in one time, you've had all these different people sit in with that. That had to be a trip, just sitting in the band and seeing all these people walk through.
Yeah, you know, back some years ago, especially when the Democrats, when Clinton was in office, before Bush, a lot of people would come and hang out. You know, Linda Carter would come and hang. We always loved seeing Linda Carter, yeah. You know. She would come and hang out and listen to it. But one night when Stevie Wonder was one of the honorees, he and Diane Schur sat in, and Herbie, Greg Fillinganes, Terry Lynn Carrington, they all sat in with the band. But when Stevie sat down, when he sat down at the piano, he immediately tore into Giant Steps. Wow. And smoked it.
Really?
Smoked it. And wow. It was like, okay, let's see what these guys can do, you know. And, but everybody, I mean, it was amazing to see him and Diane Schur, trading, they were feeding lyrics to each other. They were sitting on the piano bench feeding lyrics to each other.
Oh, man.
So that was
what
incredible.
An experience.
Yeah,
huh?
It was really incredible.
And I mean, and we should plug a little bit about the jazz ensemble, jazz orchestra as well, because you guys have different shows coming up in the spring and in the summer and everything. So, I mean, they can get all that information on chicagojazz.com and wdcb.org. But mm-hmm. You guys are doing a lot of different eclectic music. You guys did a tribute to Frank Zappa. You just did, I think, don't you have something coming up in the spring for a tribute for somebody? You know, there's lots of different things coming up.
Yeah, there are. We usually do a concert series, and then we'll do various other things with guest artists. We just did a Miles Davis, the Miles plus 19, Gil Evans at the Harris Theater. And so it's just things of that ilk that are a lot of fun to play.
That's genius music, too. It's absolute. Gil Evans was, man, he just scares me.
Yep. He's frightening, all right. And so are you, I might add.
Getting back to Bela Lugosi.
Well, what do you have coming up? You're kind of here, there, and everywhere, right? Playing with different guys all the time.
You know, something that I'm kind of excited about that we're getting together is a band called the Mississippi Mud Puppies. And it's a it's a band, and we play what we call hot music, or it's like New Orleans jazz, Jelly Roll, and like I was saying before, King Oliver, Louis Armstrong, things like that. Just fun music with a three-horn front line where you have sort of that New Orleans interaction, you know, the Sidney Bechet, Louis Armstrong, that type of thing. And Art Davis is in that, Tom Bartlett, and Dave Onderdonk, and Dan DiLorenzo. So we're going to have a lot of fun with that band, I think, in the future here. We're going to play at Fitzgerald's sometime in January, and but we're excited about that.
So they can keep their eyes open for that. The Mississippi
Mud Puppies.
Mississippi Mud Puppies. Yeah. All right. Well, it was a pleasure meeting you.
My pleasure. Absolutely.
I'm glad you came in. Tom, great showcase
tonight.
Mike, I'm
glad you met me. It was your pleasure.
It always is. It always is. Well, why don't we go out on one more tune here by Bill Overton, and we'll wrap up this Tommy's showcase here live at Katerina's. Tom, great job as usual.
Well, thank you.
And
glad to be here.
And, of course, you've been listening to Chicago Jazz Revealed. I'm Mike Jeffers, live at Katerina's, 1920 West Irving Park Road here in Chicago. More information at katerinas.com and chicagojazz.com. And we'll go out on this tune. Thanks again, Bill.
Thank you.
Thank you.